Welcome to season number 2 of Through the Eyes of the Guide, a program for tour guides and tour managers to share insider tips and tricks, connect with other guides from around the world, and further develop and grow as tourism professionals. I'm your host, Nicole Flores from Santiago de Chile, also known as Nikki Flo. I've been working in this beautiful industry as a certified local guide and tour manager since 1998. Welcome to the program. Hello and welcome to a new episode of Through the Eyes of the Guide. This new season is especially dedicated to the soft skills. And today, I'm very happy to announce that it's dedicated to the storytelling. In our last season, every single coach we've been talking with was mentioning the importance of the storytelling in our job. So the idea now is to talk with a specialist in the field. His name is Cesar Castro. He lives in Chile, my country. And he has a podcast and also a YouTube channel and an academy called Storytelling Estratégico, Strategic Storytelling. So I'm very happy to have the chance to talk with you. Thank you for being here, Cesar. And I have 1,200 questions, but I'll try to make the most important ones so we can actually fill it up some blanks. I heard a lot of questions in previous episodes and some guides, and that's also in the Facebook group of Through the Eyes of the Guide. They sent some questions. So I'll try to pass the questions and hopefully we can have a nice conversation that can help our friends around the world. So thank you very much for being here. Hello, Cesar. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm very happy and excited to be able to share, especially with your audience of tour guides and be able to talk about the power of stories or the power of storytelling in our lives.
Beautiful. This is a special niche. And as you can see, most of the people take tours around the world and they don't know basically what is the preparation and they don't know basically what guides do when they get off of the bus or the car. And this is what we do. We are always preparing ourselves, and storytelling is the trending topic, the number one topic in the industry right now, especially with this pandemia. I want to mention that one of the fears of my colleagues is to be replaced by machines or softwares or apps. And you probably agree with me, Cesar, that the storytelling is the number one thing that can make us different of those things. So
totally. And not only does it make us different, our stories and the stories that we tell make us unique. I mean, no one else can tell the story that you tell or tell the story in the way that you tell it. So I think in one area, it's great that we have technology, you know, apps and everything that makes things move quicker and makes us be more effective. But stories, and especially the way that we as humans tell stories, that's something that's been around for a long, long time. You know, over 100,000 years, we've been telling each other stories around the campfire. And even though technology can come along, it's never going to replace that human to human, you know, storytelling experience where we connect with each other through the stories that we tell.
I love to hear that because it's exactly what I think. All right, let's go to some few questions. No, you know what? Before the questions, can you tell us a little more about yourself?
No, I'm happy. Again, I'm excited to be here, you know, with your community. Like you said at the beginning, my name is Cesar. And, you know, I have this really unique opportunity and job where I teach people how to tell better stories. You know, my focus is teaching people how to use stories strategically. That's why I talk about strategic storytelling. And the last 3 to 4 years, I've been almost just focused 100% on teaching professionals and especially leaders. I work a lot in the corporate world, helping managers and executives on how to use stories as a vehicle to communicate their messages. You know, a lot of what leaders do is communicate, And you have to be able to communicate in a way that gets people excited, that gets people, you know, people want to be on board with your idea. You know, you always have to sell something. Even when you're a leader in an organization, you got to sell people the vision, the strategy, the goals. And how do we do that in a way that gets people excited and gets people passionate about what we're also trying to communicate? Well, the best tool that we as humans have are stories. And you know, I was in the leadership world for a few years as a leadership consultant. And I started realizing that no universities were teaching this to leaders. So I had a lot of, you know, managers that had studied MBAs and done, you know, different studies abroad. And they had never, no one had ever taught them about using stories as a tool. And when you study the great leaders of our time and just those leaders that have done great shifts and great changes in just human race, you know, Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, Gandhi, and these leaders that have, you know, there's been a before and after. When you study these great leaders, what you realize is that, you know, they had a vision and they had something that they wanted to accomplish, but they were able to communicate that in a way that got people excited. And all these leaders, when you study their lives and you really study how they communicated their messages, one thing that you find in common is that they were all great storytellers. And as I've studied deeper and deeper into the world of great communicators and just great influential people, what you realize is that all great leaders, all great communicators are also great storytellers. And when I realized that, you know, when just the light went off and I was like, oh, this is it. And no one is teaching people this. I kind of just made it my own personal cause to teach leaders how to do it, because I had the privilege, the advantage that I was taught storytelling when I was a child through school. Because I grew up in the United States. You know, I live in Chile now because I was born here, and just, you know, the turns of life, I ended up coming back and I got married and started my life here in Chile. But I grew up in the States, and in my school, they started teaching me storytelling when I was like 6 or 7 years old. And I just was so passionate about it. I loved great communicators. I loved hearing stories that I started wanting to learn more and more. And by the time I was 11 and 12, I started competing. And when I was 12, I actually won the national storytelling competition, you know, school age, obviously. And from there on, it just kind of took off in my life. And I never thought that I would have to, like, I never thought I'd have a job teaching other people how to be storytellers. Because I personally thought everyone knew how to tell stories. And as an adult and as an entrepreneur, you know, I realized as I started working in the corporate world that no one was teaching leaders how to be great storytellers. And that's when I, you know, kind of found the need. And I also saw that I could do it. And I said, okay, I gotta go all in on this. And that's what I've been doing my last 3 to 4 years, is just positioning myself and just going deeper and deeper into the storytelling world and teaching people and leaders and tour guides and salespeople how to leverage the power of stories to communicate their messages in a way that really reaches people's minds and especially their heart.
Fantastic. Well, that's a great story to start our podcast. That's great. That's great. I love it. And I want to highlight two words. I mean, great storytellers, it's kind of an equal of great communicators, and that is super important for guides. And also, if you are a good storyteller, you became influential, and that is incredibly important in our job too. So there's two things that maybe we can talk a little more later on. So let's start with something that is controversial in our world, in the tourism business, because still a lot of guides think that the only thing you really need to do when you are guiding is to give a lot of information. And it's important to understand that knowing more is not necessarily mean that you explain better. And that is I don't know the English word for the maldición del conocimiento. Sometimes when you know too much about a certain topics also, you just give more and more and more information without a context, and sometimes became just too complicated when you just give facts. What we can say about that?
Yeah, I think it's the expert's curse.
when you have
a lot of knowledge about something, you forget what it was like when you were a beginner.
Exactly.
You forget what it was like when you were first learning. So you start teaching in a way like as if the person who's listening to you has that same level of knowledge. And, you know, someone can say beautiful words and you can communicate a bunch of information. But if the person who's on the other side is not understanding or is not really, you know, getting on board with what you're saying, you're not going to have influence. When I was in the university, I studied psychology, just so you know. Mm-hmm. And when I was like in my second or third year, we had the chance to go to a conference to listen to one of like he's one of the you know the top scientists, neurologists, psychologists. He's got like I don't know how many doctorates, mm-hmm. and he's a very smart man. You know, he's a Chilean guy, but he's known all around the world. The thing is that our teacher said, look, we're gonna have this conference. You guys can go listen. And if you go to the conference, you're even gonna get some extra credit points, you know, which okay, mm-hmm. is always good when you're at the university. And I was actually excited because we had been studying some of his work during the semester. And you know, now getting a chance to see him live, I was like, this is gonna be a great opportunity. I'm gonna learn so much. So I go to the conference with my classmates and I sit there and he starts talking, you know, he starts rambling. And about 10 minutes had gone by and I realized I wasn't picking up on anything that he was saying. I wasn't understanding anything. And he was just talking and talking and talking. And I started getting bored. You know, I was looking around at my classmates and they were all paying attention. I was like, maybe I'm stupid because I'm not understanding what he's saying. And everyone looks like they're understanding. So I got up and I left because mm-hmm. I said, I'm not going to be here an hour just listening to a guy. I'd rather, you know, go do my homework or something. So I got up and left. And when the conference finished, you know, my classmates came out and I was like, hey, so how did it go? You know, and they were asking me, why did you leave? And I was like, look, I left because I didn't understand anything. And I said, what about you guys? And they said, we didn't understand anything either. Thing is, we just stayed because we wanted the extra credit. And I was like, man, you know what? You just wasted an hour of your life listening to a guy that you didn't understand. Maybe someone else understands him. Maybe other scientists and other people that are at that level of knowledge in that topic that he, you know, that he teaches, maybe they could understand him. But we were second year students. So again, maybe he had something very important to say. But if you can't explain it in a simple way that someone else can understand it, then it doesn't matter what you know.
Yes.
And I think that maybe this is the same thing that happens to tour guides. It happens to people who have a lot of knowledge about a certain topic. Well, they'll just start spewing out words and information, thinking that the person who's on the other side is at the same level. But I think you got to question yourself and ask, you know, how was it when I was first learning? Or how could I explain this to a 5 or 6 or 7 year old child? Mm-hmm. Because if a 6 or 7 or 8 year old child can understand it, then maybe an adult will also understand it.
And how is the participation of the storytelling in that specific situation?
Well, I think right there it's key because stories are a way to simplify mm-hmm. our information. You know, stories are a universal language. That's why we teach children in stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to teach a child about values or about being responsible. You don't talk about concepts because we as human beings, we're not very good at understanding concepts. What we're really good at, and our brain is hardwired for this, is understanding stories, is understanding. Because when someone tells us a story, and I think this is very key, Nicole, and I think this is something that, you know, the tour guides, they have to understand this. One thing that happens when we tell a story is that we're not just giving information. We're taking people on an experience. Literally. They've actually done studies in Princeton University. They've done this study a few times where, well, they'll have a person like in front of an audience, right? And this person is telling a story, okay? A personal story. And they got this person with a little helmet. So they're seeing, you know, all his brain activity. And they're also monitoring the people that are sitting and they're seeing what's going on in their brains. And there are two very important things that occur, you know, very important things that occur. First, the person who's telling the story, what they see is that his brain, his or her brain, when they're telling the story, it's as if they're reliving that same experience. You know, their brain is lighting up. When you're thinking about something that occurred in your life and you're remembering that as a story, literally your brain is making you relive that experience. So that's the first very important, just finding that they showed, is that when you tell a story, you're reliving an experience. But I think the most important factor is that the people that are also listening to your story, they're also living a similar experience to yours. So many times we want people, like you have, for example, as a tour guide, I can imagine that you have a place, you know, that you've thought about and that you want people to imagine and that you want people to feel, right? When you tell a story, not just when you talk about concepts, because if I just say, you know, Bahamas is a beautiful place, okay, we're talking about concepts. So it's very hard for me to imagine that, you know, what is a beautiful place, because maybe what's beautiful to you is different to me. But when I share a story with you, whether it be my own personal story or a story of a client who went to Bahamas, okay, when I share that story, not only am I reliving that experience in my own mind, but I'm getting the people who are listening to the story to also relive that experience. And that's why stories are so memorable. There's actually studies that show that stories are up to 20 times more memorable than just giving information or numbers or statistics or concepts. Because when you share a story, you're not only giving information, but you're getting people to live an experience, and an experience that generates emotion. And when you want to influence in people's actions, you know, in decision-making, you don't only have to give information, but you also have to learn how to give information with emotion. That's the key.
Yes.
Information with emotion is what influences people's decisions. And most of the time, what we're doing is just giving and loading people up with a bunch of information instead of focusing on, okay, I got to give this information, but how can I give you this information with emotion? How can I give you this information as an experience? Because that's what will influence people's decision-making afterwards, right? And the best way to give people information with emotion is to tell them a story. There is no other.
Yes.
There is no other way.
Fantastic.
There is no other way.
Fantastic. Totally agree. Let me ask you something about the audience, because that's another topic that I think it's crucial. Rather, when we talk about targeting your stories and also when where it should supposed to be the focus or your stories, mm-hmm. in both senses. So what we can say about that?
Well, this is something what I'm gonna share with you right now. When I figured this out, at first it really hurt my ego. Okay. But now you're going to understand why. And this is applicable to you, to me. And this is just how our psychology works. People don't want to just hear your story because you're a great person and because I just want to hear your story. You know, the reality of things is that people, what they want to do is they want to hear their own story from your story. Mm-hmm. So let's like differentiate this. It's not that people just want to listen to you because you're a great person and I want to hear your story. Maybe your mother does and your parents or something, not even your kids sometimes want to listen to your stories, but your mother and some people that really love you, they want to listen to your story because they love you. But most people, your clients, they don't just want to listen to your story because of you. What they want is they want to listen to their own story through your story. So when we understand this concept, what we have to realize is that, okay, if I'm going to share a story, whether, and this doesn't mean that I can't share a personal story or that I can't share a story about, you know, a client. What it means is that I have to use the story as a vehicle to tell the person's story. So I can share a personal story about my life if I know that that story that I'm sharing is also going to resonate and it's going to connect with a story in your own personal life. So for example, if you have kids, right? If you have kids and you know, you have little 5 or 6 year old kids, I can share a story about my own personal life with my 5 or 6 year old kid, and it's going to resonate with you. It's going to connect because at one point of the story, you're going to be like, oh, wow, that also happened to me. Or, oh, wow, what Cesar is just like me, because what he's telling me that happened is just the same thing that happened to me the other day. And when that happens, when we get that synchronicity where I'm telling my own story, but you really feel like I'm telling your story, now I've got your attention. Now I'm able to captivate you because you're listening to your own story. So it's really important to know who your audience is, because if I'm going to share a story, I got to think about what elements am I going to insert into my story that's going to make my audience connect with it. That's going to make my audience hopefully say, oh, wow, that also happened to me. Or Cesar or Nicole is just like me. And when that occurs, now people are much more willing to want to listen to the rest of your story.
Exactly. In other words, if I can reflect myself there, it's when really becomes important or interesting for the person that listened the story to the story.
Yeah. And in a story, if we want to go like specifically how you do this in a story, mm-hmm. the vehicle for connection in a story is through the characters. The characters of the story are the emotional vehicle of the story. So when I want you to connect with the story, I got to get you to connect with the characters, hopefully with the main character. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is what Hollywood does, right? When we yes. go watch a movie, you know, the first 15, 20 minutes of the movie, they're always taking you deep inside the main character's life and their problems and their issues and their insecurities. Now, why do they do this? Because they know that, you know, any normal person has insecurities and they have issues and they have problems and they have, you know, a bunch of doubts and things like that. So if they get you to connect, and hopefully while you're watching the movie, you forget that you're watching the movie. You think that now you're living your own life, you know, through Captain America or through whatever. Now you're going to be much more willing to want to listen to the rest of the story. So when we want people to connect with their story, what we really want is people to connect with the characters of our story, specifically the main character of our story. If I get you to connect emotionally with the main character, you invest emotionally in the main character, you're going to be much more willing to not only listen to the story, mm-hmm. but also then accept the invitation or accept the information that I'm trying to teach or give you through the story.
So, Cesar, do you have any example in your particular life where you can relate with this? Let's say that you've been taking a tour and you can just enjoy a place because the story behind and not just because the information. You've been there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like always whenever you for me personally, you know, I as a family with my wife, we love to travel. We love to travel. We love to go places. And for us, even the places that we choose to go to, it's because of the stories that are behind it, because we like to go on adventures, right? We all want to, we're adventure seeking animals. I mean, we're animals that are always seeking adventure. We're always trying to find new things. So if I can go somewhere, for example, a few years ago, we went to the south of Chile, right? Mm-hmm. And we were thinking about like where we wanted to stay. And at the end, we ended up staying in this cabin. We stayed in a cabin next to a lake, but we didn't just stay there because it was a pretty cabin or a pretty lake, but because there was a whole story behind this mystical place, you know, and they did a great job in selling us, you know, the whole meaning behind this place and why it was by this lake. So for us, it was more of an adventure than just going and staying at a place. And I think if we have the capacity, the ability to get people to start visualizing and imagining an adventure, you know, people pay for that. People are willing to pay more for an experience and an adventure than just to go stay at a hotel. Even if it's just a hotel, if it's got a backstory to it, then you can elevate the price. There's a study that they did in 2000, I think it was 2010. There's a reporter. His name was Rob Walker. Okay. And he works, I don't know if he still does, but at least during that time, he worked at the New York Times, okay? Mm-hmm. Very successful reporter, columnist and all that. And he was, you know, hearing a lot of information about how storytelling was the most powerful communication tool and how people would buy based on the stories. So he wanted to put that, you know, he wanted to see if that was real. He wanted to try out the theory. So what he did was he went to eBay, you know, eBay where you just buy stuff randomly. Yes. And he bought 200 objects, just random 200 objects. In total, he spent about $500. So each object was about anywhere from $1 to $3, okay? And after he bought these objects, these 200 objects, he then called his friends. He had friends that were also, you know, some were authors, some were columnists, some were reporters. He called 200 friends and he asked each one of them, he said, hey, look, I'm going to give you this object and I want you to write a story, a backstory for this object. And it's going to be a fake story. I mean, we're not going to try to lie to people. They're going to know that this is a made up story, right? They're talking about like fairies and dragons and stuff like that. So it's clearly not a true story, but we want to add a backstory to each one of these objects. And 200 of his friends accepted the invitation of seeing if they could transform these objects into significant objects. Okay. So he had these 200 stories, 200 objects, and he put them back on eBay. He uploaded them on eBay and he waited anxiously to see what was going to happen. If people were going to buy these objects and how much they would be willing to pay for these objects. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what he found, I mean, this is in this study, they've done it a few times and it's always been similar results, is that people were willing to pay up to 10, in some cases, 20 times more for the object just because it had a story to it. He actually ended up making more than $8,000 when he resold these objects. He made more than $8,000. Objects that he originally bought in $3, he was selling some objects in $100 just because they had a story. There was nothing different. It's not like they fixed the objects or anything. They just added stories to the objects. And that's why Seth Godin, who's one of the gurus of marketing today, he says that now people don't just buy for the characteristics or even the benefits, which is how we're usually, you know, that's how we've been taught to sell, right? Let's talk about characteristic or benefits. He says today people buy because of the stories. Yeah. You know, what is the story that you're going to tell and what is the story that's going to make you different? Because that's your real advantage, is the story that you have.
Yes. Fantastic. And why the story is important for me, I mean, is that paying attention to your audience always is going to be a key. That remind me, Ken Hamer, that he says designing a presentation without an audience in mind is like writing a love letter and dressing it like to whom it might concern. I mean,
yeah.
So focusing the audience, I think it's another of the very, very important things we need to be aware of.
Yeah.
Cesar, what about the use of silence on storytelling?
Silence is actually, it's a technique, you know, that we use in communication and public speaking. And silence is actually one of the most powerful techniques, public speaking techniques, mm-hmm. that leaders use when they communicate. First, because silence gives people time to really, like, you know, simulate what you're saying. Like if I tell you something and then I just keep talking fast and fast and fast, you don't even have time to think about what I'm saying. So first, silence gives people time to think about what you're saying first. And second, and this is a very technical aspect of silence generates expectation. Mm-hmm. So if I'm gonna say something important to you, right? If I'm gonna say something that I really want you to pay attention to, then before I say that, I add a few seconds of silence. So if I'm talking to you right now and I'm like, look, I'm going to share with you guys right now the most important thing that you can do. The most important thing that you can do so you can captivate and really persuade your audience. That silence that I just used made your brain go, you know, what is it that he's going to say? And now you're paying more attention to the words. So always see silence. If we're looking at it in a technical, like the first use of silence is it gets people to think, right? Let people think when you're saying something or asking a question, give people time to think. So silence gives people time to think. But second, if we're talking about more like a public speaking skill, silence magnifies what you're going to say. So anytime that you're going to say something important, before you say it, give yourself a few, 1 or 2 seconds of silence, and it gets people's attention way up. And now they're more focused on what you're going to say.
Fantastic. Okay. Another thing that I want to ask you, Cesar, is about the importance of the structure when you have a story to tell. How important is to have this famous begin, middle, or end, or situation, complication, and solution, or whatever you call it? How important is to actually have the structure?
We put structure into our stories, whether we want to or not. I think the good news, this is something that I always share with my clients, is that we're all natural storytellers. You know, you can even ask a child, a four-year-old child, like when they go to school, when they come home, you can ask them like, hey, so what happened today at school? And the child will start telling you a story. They're not gonna take out a PowerPoint presentation or, you know, bullet points. They start telling you a story. I've lived this because I have twins. I have 5-year-old twins, you know. And last year, obviously before the pandemic, they were going to school. And when they'd come home from school, I would ask them like, hey, you know, what did you do today? You know, what happened at school? And they would, you know, they weren't telling me like Hollywood stories, but they would be like, oh, dad, when I got to school, I started playing with my friend and we fell off the swings. And then the teacher came and they were telling me a story naturally. It's not like I taught them how to, the structure of a story, right? Mm-hmm. So the first thing is that you got to understand is that we already naturally put a structure in our stories. Now, if you consciously put a structure in your story, like any model or methodology, what it does is it gives you more conscious in regards to like certain stages and how to really add more to certain stages. Like when you play sports, you know, I could just go out and kick a soccer ball, but if I have methodology and I know that I got to kick it with certain part of my feet, and I know that I got to take certain steps before, now I can really, really get better at it, right? You can only get better at something if you have some kind of a method to it. So with stories, it's the same thing. If you don't have a method, if you don't have steps, how can you get better? How can you be aware of your story if it's working or if it's not working? Mm-hmm. And in that case, you know, there are different models. I personally have a model of five stages that I teach. You know, I say that there's only 5 steps to a strategic story. Mm-hmm. And I can share that with you right now if you want.
Yes,
just
please.
So people can have a just so people can have like an overview. Obviously,
yes.
You know, I could be teaching this for eight hours if it's necessary, but I'm gonna do it in just a few minutes. Mm-hmm. So people can see that there are certain, for me, in each step or each stage, there's an objective. Okay. And if you understand what the objective is of each stage, then you can really, like when you're creating your story, you can really go in deep and see if you can reach the objective. So for example, first step in Spanish is what I call la chispa. Mm-hmm. English, the spark, right? Which what I'm trying to say is that when you're starting a story or when you're starting a conversation or when you're starting a presentation, the first thing that you need to focus on is creating that spark, you know, getting people excited or getting people curious or interested in what you're going to say. So the first stage or step of any good story is that you first have to get people's attention. Mm-hmm. And the way that you get people's attention is by awakening their curiosity, right? So I can do that by asking you a question. I could do this by saying something, you know, giving you like a declaration of something that I know is going to be a little bit disruptive and it's going to get you like, what is going on? Like, for example, when I start my keynotes, when I give conferences, mm-hmm. I have different ways of starting my conferences. But one of the ways that I like to start it the most is that I'll get up, you know, I'll use a few seconds of silence. So I don't usually get up and I'll be like, my name is Cesar Castro. No, I just get up and I look at people for a few seconds. And then I say to them, I'm like, I have really bad news for you guys. Unfortunately, I have to start telling you that I have really bad news. Now, why do I do that? Because I know in your brain, when you hear bad news, like what bad news? You know,
attention,
what is he gonna say?
Attention, attention.
Attention, attention. It gets your curiosity going. Mm-hmm. You know, it piques your interest. And that's what the spark is all about. And that's mm-hmm. the first thing that we have to worry about when we're starting a story is how do I do it? So the first few seconds, you know, 3 to 7 to 9 seconds. How do I do it? How do I start my story, or how do I start my presentation in a way that's gonna get people's attention? That's gonna at least spark your creativity and like, oh, you know, what is it that this person wants to tell me? Okay, so that's the first step is the spark, and the objective is getting people's attention. Mm-hmm. Second, once I got your attention, now I'm gonna start going into the context of my story. So that's the second step, is the context, right? And in the context of your story, you have to answer 3 questions really quickly. 3 questions, okay? Are you ready for this? See how I use silence? See how I use silence to get you like, oh, 3 questions. What are the 3 questions? I'm getting people to think, okay?
Yes.
3 questions. Question number one, when? When did this occur? Okay, remember, you're telling a story. So a story is always in a certain moment. So when did it occur? First question. Second, where did it occur? Now, these 2 questions are just to create the scene, okay? Mm-hmm. The when and where are just to create the scene, because the third question is who? Who did this occur to? And the who is what we were talking about before, the character, okay? So this is the stage where you introduce your character, your main character, into your story. Okay, look at this. From the very beginning of your story, after you got people's attention, now you're going into your story, and you're introducing your character right away into your story. Why? Because your character is that emotional vehicle, right? Where people need to connect with. And the quicker they connect to your main character, the more willing they'll be to listen to the rest of your story.
Yes.
Now, this is like, right now I'm teaching you the method behind it, but it's really like when you're putting it into practice, it's really simple. It'd be like if I said to you something like, you know, Nicole, two weeks ago, I was in my office and I was waiting for a phone call, a very important phone call that I was going to have with a client. Now, what I just did right there, I answered the 3 questions. 2 weeks ago, I was sitting in my office and I was waiting for a phone call with a client, right? Just by doing that, you know, when your brain perceives, this is the great part about stories. Since we as human beings are hardwired to understand everything in stories, when we perceive that someone else is telling us a story, our attention right away goes up. You know, when someone gets up or starts talking with you and they're like just giving you facts and numbers and statistics or just information, we get bored. When we talk in concepts, we get bored because we can't imagine it. But when we're talking, I'm like, hey, Nicole, you know what? 2 weeks ago, I was with my child, you know, my 5-year-old child, and we were playing in our backyard. The moment I do that, your brain right away gets activated because it perceives that I'm going to start telling a story. And our brains, this is a great secret that I'm going to tell you right now for all the tour guides. Our brains cannot resist a great story. Like, obviously, if I start telling my story and after 10 to 15 seconds, my story is boring, you'll probably get disconnected. But at least I have your attention, because your people's brains, humans, that's all of us, men, women, Latinos, you know, North Americans, Africans, whatever. We're all hardwired the same way, where we can't resist. We can't resist paying attention to a story. Okay? Yes. We can't resist it. So the context is to start going into your story, and specifically the objective here in the context is to get people to connect with your main character. That's the goal. So the goal in the first stage is to get people's attention. The goal in the context is to get people to connect to your main character. Okay? Mm-hmm. The third stage, after you get people to connect with the context of your story, is the obstacles. I mean, your story needs to have obstacles. It has to have conflict or some kind of a challenge, or you know, you lost, or something has to happen, like something that is painful has to happen to the main character. If your story does not have any kind of conflict, you know, if it doesn't have any kind of challenge, then it's not worth telling. I mean, I'm that I'm that direct. If you don't have, if you're trying to tell a story and the only thing you're going to tell about your story is how great you are and how awesome you are and how incredible you are and how everything that you touch turns into gold, I don't want to listen to that story. I mean, I wouldn't go to the movies to watch a movie like that, right? We don't go to the movies to watch a movie where the main character from the very beginning is great. And then in the middle of the movie, everything's great. And then the end of the movie finishes great. We don't want to watch those kind of movies. We want to watch movies where the main character has a bunch of issues and problems, but is like us. And then that main character starts going through struggles, starts going through conflicts, starts going through personal conflicts or conflicts with others or conflicts with a pandemic or conflicts with whatever, you know, with nature, with animals. There's got to be some kind of a conflict, because if there isn't conflict, then we're not going to be able to generate more emotion in our story. What generates emotion, high emotion, is conflict. I mean, that's why we remember conflict in our lives, right? We remember difficult situations, because conflict generates emotion. So your goal in this stage, in the obstacle phase, is to generate as much emotion as you can. And the way that you generate emotion is through conflict, struggle, challenge, failure. Okay. And once you go through this phase in your story, now you go to the fourth stage with it, which is the solution. So you see, it's not that we end the story with the conflict and, you know, the challenge. There's got to be a solution. There's got to be a change. There's got to be something that occurs with this main character, and he gets out of the challenge, right? Now, what I'm going to tell you right now, this is kind of going to take out all the magic of the stories, but this is what I do, right? I teach you what's really behind the curtains. Any story that you watch on television or read on books or listen to, any story, what it's really trying to tell you or what it's trying to show you is just the process of change of a character. You know, the story starts here, and you know that by the end of the story, the character is gonna finish here, right? He's gonna finish better than how he started. That's the rule. He's gotta finish better than what he started, right? There's gotta be a change. There's gotta be a growth. So in the solution phase, this is where the character of the story, the main character, the hero, goes through that transformation and change. This is where we show people the change in the solution. And we leave people emotionally, you know, happy, excited, you know, inspired, because the hero, you know, who we connected with from the very beginning and went through a bunch of struggles and a bunch of challenges, now they're able to solve it, or they're able to grow, or they're able to evolve, which is what we always need to see at the end of a story, okay? Now, I've taught you four steps. I said that there were five. Yes. So there's one that's missing, and I usually leave the fifth one to the end, right? Yes. But right now, just with these four steps, you have a good story, right? Just with these four steps, you have enough elements and objectives to have a good story. And the fifth step, this is the step that really turns a good story into a strategic story. Mm-hmm. This fifth step that I'm going to teach you right now, this is what differentiates a good story from a strategic story. Because the fifth step has to do with, what is the lesson? What is the lesson, or what is the moral of the story? Mm-hmm. And this is extremely important, because the moral of the story, the objective of your story, that is what you're leaving for your audience, right? So when I create a story, I usually start with this in mind. I mean, in the structure of a story, this is what I share at the end. But when I'm creating the story, I always start out with, what is the objective of my story? What is the lesson or the moral that I want to leave with my audience? Because like we said at the beginning, it's always about them. We're always seeing how we can add value to them first. Because if you want your story to really be memorable, and you want your story to really generate an impact in people's lives, then you have to think about, what value am I adding to them? Not me. I mean, like, if you start your story just like, no, what I want is, I want more money, and I want to sell, and I want to sell, and I want to sell, right? Then you're not going to create a story thinking about what you can add to other people's lives. But I'm gonna teach you something as an entrepreneur as well. You know, when you first focus on adding value to others, now you're gonna have a lot more influence. I mean, real leaders, real influential leaders, they're always focused first on what value they can add to others. Because if I add value to you, now you're gonna be much more willing, right, to accept my invitation. For example, in our case, Nicole, mm-hmm. like you invited me to your podcast, right? And I'm here and I'm doing this to give value to your audience and I'm here to help you. And I'm sure that if in the future I say, hey, Nicole, you know, will you come on my podcast? Or Nicole, can you help me out with something? You'd be willing to do it because I've already added value to you. You know, and that's how we as human beings work. Influence is a consequence of adding value to people's lives. So a lot of times what we want is just to sell. We want, like, I want you to buy from me. I want you to say that I am, you know, the best tour guide. But people aren't going to say that just because you want that. People are going to say that because you're the one who helped them the most. So the one who helps the most is the one who leads the most. And if we understand this concept, then you'll understand that your story is just a vehicle. Your story is just a vehicle to give people and leave with people a lesson or a moral or something that will add value to their lives. Because if you add value to people's lives, that's when you become very memorable to them. And that's where you become very influential to them.
It is. Thank you. Well, that's those five steps. I really like them. Super, super. Let me ask you, if we can give some tips to our guides, to our audience, or best practices, let's call it, in order mm-hmm. to tell them, okay, you know, now it's very important to work in your storytelling for being the best you can be. What best practices we can recommend for the guides that wants to get it better in it?
Yeah, I think that there's a first step to this process of becoming a great storyteller. Mm-hmm. And the first step is always has to do with mindset, right? With your mindset. And what do I mean when I talk about mindset? There are two kinds of mindsets that I see in people that really hinder their performance as storytellers. First is people say, I don't have any stories. I don't have any stories, right? I just, you know, Cesar, you dedicate yourself to this. So that's why you have a whole bunch of stories because this is what you do. But you know what? If we see our lives in our experiences, like every experience that we have in life can become a potential story. And I actually, one of the things that I teach my clients is that I believe that 90% of the stories that you can share and that can impact people's lives are already stories that are in you. You know, most of the time, like my clients at first are like, oh, you know, I'm going to search in Google for motivational stories or whatever. And I'm like, don't do that. Because the only thing you're doing with that is you're showing me that you don't believe that you have good stories, you know, and you have, I think like, we all have great stories, but what we're not used to is like really valuing and searching for those stories. So my first invitation, my first tip has to do with a mind shift is realizing that stories and these influential, powerful stories are already in you. You just have to start treasuring these experiences that you have in your life. Like in my case, like when I have an emotional experience in my life, mm-hmm. and when I say emotional, it can be like positive or negative, right? Like something that makes me very happy or something that makes me anxious or sad or scared. Whenever I have an experience in my life, which is every day, where I felt emotion, I have in my cell phone, you know, I have a little inventory, like a personal inventory of stories. So whenever I have these emotional experiences in my life, I write it down right away. Like just a paragraph. I don't write out the whole story. Just like, today I felt happy playing with my daughter in our backyard, right? I just write it down just to have it there. Because if I write it down, a week can go by or 2 weeks can go by. And when I start reading them, I start remembering why I wrote it down. And that could be a potential story. I mean, I could use that potentially for something. I'm not saying that I'm going to use it or not, but I could potentially use it for something. And what you're going to realize as you do this exercise of writing down, if you dedicate like 5 minutes every day, when it's the end of your day, you just sit down for 5 minutes and start writing down just, you know, a brief summary of experiences that you've had during the day, you're going to realize that you have a whole bunch of stories. And that's the first mind shift that you have to make is realize that you have stories. Okay. And second is people think that no one wants to listen to their stories. So first is I don't have stories. Okay. And second is I have stories, but no one wants to listen to my stories. You know, I don't have great Hollywood stories. You know, I don't have great experiences where I have to cut off my arm to survive, or, you know, where I've had great adventures. I don't have those kind of stories, you know, like Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And most of us, to be honest with you, most of us don't have those stories. I mean, if you do have this great adventurous story, work on it. And maybe that can become a great product someday, or a keynote or whatever. But for the most part, Nicole, you and I, we have very like normal everyday stories. Like, you know, like you told me at the beginning, you know, my nephews are here and they left their Legos all around. That is a story in itself, right? And it's a very typical story. If you would have seen my office before I got here, it was also a mess because my kids sometimes come in here and play in my office as well. And it's just everyday life. But these experiences that we have, you know, they can generate connection with other human beings. Because if I tell you that you and I have similar stories, now we're connected. So this is the mind shift that I would invite you to do. You don't need sensational stories to impact people's lives. You need simple and sincere stories to impact people's lives. And I think that if we all start with these two things, like this is to me is what hinders people's storytelling performance the most. You know, first, they think that they don't have stories. And second, they think that their stories are not valuable or not sensational. So they don't even try. So if you're able to shift or change these two mindsets, first realizing that stories are everywhere and that you just have to start writing them down. And second, if you realize that it's not necessary for you to have sensational stories, just simple and sincere stories to impact people's lives. Just by doing that, your storytelling will blow the roof off, because the rest is practice, the rest is creating, but the rest is much easier once you're able to change these two mindsets that a lot of us have.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, it's been great, Cesar. And before I start finishing our episode, I want to ask you, do you have any books that you recommend for people to read regarding the storytelling, or maybe some video conferences or something that, you know, if somebody wants to try the first steps and get a little more information about it?
I'm writing my book right now. I hope to have it done by March. So once I have my book done, I'll tell you. I'll always talk about my book, right?
Yes.
But I think like good books that are very practical, because there are books that are theoretical and, you know, talk about the theory of story. I think you want very practical things, how to implement them. I like a book that's called Stories That Stick by Kendra Hall. Yeah. Very good, very simple, very like step by step. There's also another book by Paul Smith, who's also a friend of mine. And he's got a few books, but one of them is called Lead with a Story. He's got another book called Sell with a Story. Okay. And both of those are very practical, very like, you know, just how to apply it in everyday life.
It's method. Yes.
Yeah. And then there's one, this one's a little bit bigger, but it's got a lot of like very practical tips. That's called, it's called The Story Theater Method from Doug Stevenson. Okay. Story Theater Method from Doug Stevenson. And his book is very like, he's got like 30 chapters in the book, but each chapter takes you really in depth in how to, you know, bring to life your characters, how to use dialogues, how to use your body. So very like how to put the theater into your storytelling, because he's actually originally an actor, right? And what he did is he applied everything that he learned in acting to storytelling. That's why it's called the story theater method. I like those three books for me are usually like my go-to books when I need to renew anything, you know, Stories That Stick, any book from Paul Smith, who's also very practical, very corporate in how he teaches, and Doug Stevenson, who teaches you how to use theater with storytelling.
Fantastic.
I think those three books can be of great help.
Cesar, if somebody wants to contact you, if we want to have more information about you, where we can find your Facebook or your podcast, and you want to share something?
Yeah, I think everything is in my webpage. Mm-hmm. If you go to cesarcastrov.com, cesarcastrov.com, V is just the letter V, right? Mm-hmm. Everything's there. Like, you can have access to all my social media there, my podcast, because I also have a podcast that's called Storytelling Estratégico. But if you go to my webpage, it's all there, as well as my services, the Academy, which is a membership that I have. Right now we're closed. The Academy is closed for new members until March, because we're retweaking it, creating some new things. So from March on, you can go to my webpage and you'll find Academy and you'll be able to see what we have in there. But I think the webpage is the best place, because from there you can go to all my different social media, YouTube, podcast, everything.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Cesar. I think the other 1,200 questions I had, we need to do it at another time, because it's been already a great episode. So thank you very much for being with us. This has been great. I just love it. And I hope to have an opportunity to talk again about this fantastic topic of storytelling. So
thank you
very much for
thank
being
you.
Here.
I'm very happy to be able to share with you and your community.
Thank you. And thank you to the audience for being here with us. And I'll be waiting for you next time. So thank you and see you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for another episode. I hope you enjoyed it, and I'll be waiting for you next time with more useful topics with another guest from around the world. Until then, keep learning!